So the reason I threw this in here this week was the log line for this movie from Nerdist, like, blew me away and had me laughing at my Instagram feed for at least 30 seconds. I was giddily laughing because the log line that Nerdist said was, the little tagline, little caption they put to it was, "It's just like Taken, except with a pig."
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Hello, Ted! It is episode 163, and after 2 weeks off, this is the life of Boom, Boom, Boom. How's it going, man?
Good. How are you?
Oh, God. Thirsty. Thirsty.
So thirsty. Let's crack them, and then we can talk about our past couple of weeks.
Couple of weeks, yeah, and all the hanging out and maskless.
I know.
All the whatever, yeah.
Hugging and kissing hello.
Oh, God.
And
tonguing.
And what are you cracking open there?
I'm cracking open a Lagunitas Maximus Colossal IPA, a 9% ABV.
Oh, nice. Cool.
Yeah.
And I have a very special.
Oh, you're doing that one?
Is that all right? Can I? It's the only beer I have.
Oh, I don't know if it's ready. I was going to wait another week.
Oh, you think I wait? Wait another week.
Wait. Do you have another beer, though?
I have no other beer.
Oh.
I'll wait another week, though.
What do you have? You don't have anything?
I don't have anything.
Well, okay. Drink it. It might not be fully carb.
No. I thought another week would do it. No? You gotta.
Okay, try it. No, go for it. Is it cold?
It's cold. Yeah, it's been cold.
Okay, go for it.
All right.
I don't have one, but I can't have it with you.
Well, here, I'll wait. I'll wait a week.
No, but you gotta drink, have it. Go for it.
Shit, I should have orchestrated this better. Okay, so explain to me what I have here.
Well, what you have.
Oh, it's carbed.
Did it go psst like that?
Yeah. Yeah.
It did? Let me see. No, pour vigorous. Pour vigorous. Oh, it is carbed.
Yeah, carbed.
Oh, hell yeah. Okay, it's good to go.
Look at that.
Oh, sweet. Oh, my God. I'm so happy.
Look at the head. It's beautiful.
By the way, Ted's drinking one of my homebrews, if you haven't figured it out.
Yes.
How's it smell?
Wonderful.
So it's an Imperial IPA. It's 9.5%, 100-plus IBU.
No, it's amazing.
Is it really? Is it good?
It's like bitter, sweet. Yeah.
How long do you have it in the fridge for?
I had put it in the fridge a couple of days ago, like Wednesday.
Okay, so it's cold.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, sweet. Oh, dude, I was so nervous.
Oh, it's beautiful.
It's just like ripping the Band-Aid off for me.
What, you worried it wasn't going to carb? What did you, what's the?
That's the main thing. I was worried it wasn't going to be carbed, but I'm so happy it's carbed. Anyway, what I'm drinking is the Lagunitas Maximus Colossal IPA at 9.0%. And I can say you beat me this week because my beer, the one I gave you, is 9.5%. So
there you go. 0.5%. You beat yourself.
I handed you a victory. No, but dude, I'm so happy. Oh my God. I wanted to have them together. I didn't expect you to pull it out tonight, man. Jeepers.
Sorry.
No, that's perfectly fine. Hey, as long as it's tasty and you're loving it, that's victory enough, let me tell you.
Yes.
Give me some tasting notes on it. What do you think?
So the tasting notes, I think it has that bitter, it has a little pucker, like a really nice, even bitter across like the back of your tongue.
There are so many hops in this. It's over 200 IBU.
Yeah.
It's like maxed out to the max. No, I'm serious. I'm serious.
Yeah. So, I mean, I bet it feels like that. And it's just this very full IPA. It's like IPA poster child.
Full bodied.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good. Well, enjoy, man. I'm happy to give it to you.
And it's amazing. So we had one last week that wasn't as carbed.
Right.
And I could definitely.
It was 6 days in the bottle.
6 days in the bottle. And this one's only like another week. So this is only 13 days in the bottle.
It's all takes, I guess.
Right. Or even less than that. But it is noticeably more mature. Like when I had it, it does, you know, green's not a taste, but you could taste that it was young.
Too new. Yeah. Yeah. It's not ready yet.
For sure. Last week. Yeah. Young. So this is ripe. This is ripe in a good
nice,
way.
Nice. Nice. I'm loving it. Yeah. This Lagunitas I'm drinking is, you know, it's malty and it's bitter as well. And it's not like one of those citruses or any of that kind of stuff. It's really like earthy, kind of piney, but it's almost like earth tones in a sense, right? It's very like grounded in its flavor. It doesn't have anything fruity, citrusy. It's like none of that. It's just malt, hop, and just booze.
Down to business.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. So, you know, we kind of talked about how we got together and stuff. And yeah, last week,
that beautiful, beautiful tri-tips you cooked last weekend was amazing.
Over oak. Yeah. Santa Maria style and stuff. But yeah, so we didn't record for 2 weeks for a couple reasons. You know, we just had things going and various life happenings and stuff. And then you guys drove up for, well, early Father's Day, Clarissa's birthday weekend.
Yes.
We hung out, ate, drank, and was merry, and, you know, just good family friend time and all that stuff. So it was amazing.
Barbara revealed that she's actually like a daiquiri specialist that was undercover that was for all these decades.
So my mother-in-law comes back with like a flat of strawberries from like the corner farm stand and says, "Ah, I brought strawberries." So she has this flat of strawberries and we're like, "Oh, I'll be right back." Or I'm just like, "I'll be right back." I run to the corner liquor store, get a couple bottles of rum, come back in like 10 minutes. And it's like, "All right, let's blend them up." We drank the whole flat.
The whole flat and 2/3 of each bottle.
It was amazing. It was amazing. Plus countless bottles of wine and beer and it was such a good time. I'm glad you guys came.
Great. It was a great time.
Hung out. We're all vaccinated. I mean, I don't think there was, and my voice is back. I got over raspiness from the crazy wind and sand and all that.
The wind, the graduation wind.
Yeah, we had graduation, of course, at the high school. That passed. I mean, that's kind of old news now for most people in the U.S. But yeah, I mean, overall, you know, just finishing up the end of the work year. I know you're still doing your thing with work, which never ends.
Never ending. But, you know, summertime, you know, the bosses always say, you know, put in your time, take your time off, be with your family. It's that time of year. So, you know, we're trying to piece it together. It is a bit of a, it's like an engine that hasn't really been started in a really long time.
Right.
You know, we went up to see you guys last weekend. And then the weekend prior to that, we were hanging out with some friends locally. And I was like, all right, this is what it used to be like, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
But then to make plans, I was like, oh, the kids want to go back to Disneyland. And Anne wasn't ready a couple weeks ago, but maybe we're ready for, you know, July or something like that. And I'm like, ugh, you know, now it's the chores of like arranging this stuff. So we'll see.
When I saw Anne initiating a kiss on Clarissa's cheeks, given the lean in kind of a thing, I'm like, and knowing where Anne was a year ago, you know, emotionally with all this, I'm like, COVID's over.
Right. I mean, the Willett household was, you know, we're talking COVID clouds.
Oh, you guys were locked out
a year ago. I was running with a mask on. This past week, the first week I ran, and I didn't even have...
Your lung capacity is like doubled.
I didn't even have a mask on my wrist. I was just like going full hog. I was like, it's 7 o'clock in the morning. It's 100 degrees already, you know.
Oh,
I'm gonna run without a mask.
Man, that's like what your heart's gonna do is tick tick boom.
Are we jumping into it?
What a wonderful legacy sell.
Yeah, right?
I mean, it's unbelievable. Lin-Manuel Miranda and Jonathan Larson, man. Like,
yeah, no, it's a great sell. It's a great, you know, so both of these you know, we'll see if you picked up on a theme for the trailers, but
Between the two. Okay. I don't know. I don't think I have.
But Tick, Tick, Boom. We're talking about Tick, Tick, Boom. And I think something about Andrew Garfield, his his acting prowess and the way that he kind of has a frenetic nature to him really lends well to this character and to what we have going on in the story about like the musicality of it. You know, it's just, it looks wonderful. Audrey scooped me on this. She sent this to me and she's like, you know, she's always like, I always see trailers 2 days before you. I was like, well, you know, you're the finger on the pulse of all the trailers.
And why am I talking to you?
But yeah, she's an Andrew Garfield fan, even though she's Tom Holland's future wife, but you know, still likes all the Spider-Man.
I think with Garfield too, when you like, he's not the Chris Hemsworth hunk sort of a guy, right? You know, he's not strikingly handsome or anything, but he's like outrageously cute in some ways, like maybe girls might think that. And when you think about it in those terms, it's like he's disarming.
Right.
The way the trailer opens and, you know, he's singing and they're kind of at that little house apartment party. His demeanor is just disarming. And it's just like that immediately draws you in. And you're like, I don't even know what this is about, but I'm game. I'm here.
Right.
You know, like I want to have fun with you. I want to sing.
Let's have the ride. Let's have the ride that musicals provide.
You know, and it's funny because we were going to record last week and we didn't, and we prepared stuff. And, you know, you watch trailers and all this, and the earworm that this gives you with the musical and everything, it like took like half a week to get it out of my head. So Ted says to me today, he goes, well, let's do that. Let's continue with doing Tick, Tick, Boom, but we're going to swap a couple things, you know, from what we're going to do.
Right.
And I thought, oh, great. Now that I finally got that out of my head, it's going to be with me again for another week. And I could see watching this as a movie, good sound, home theater, whatever, you know, you know, like just super musical, super fun. Dude, this is going to, and then you're going to be like, oh my God, I need
the soundtrack.
The soundtrack, right?
Oh yeah.
I need the soundtrack. Now you're going to get the soundtrack.
Right.
This thing's going to be like, just like churning in the back of your ear for months. And you're going to be like, I can't get it. I can't lose it.
Right. Oh, it's amazing.
It's wonderfully horrific.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. And I don't mean to blow up our rollout, our program, but did you see In the Heights? You don't have HBO Max yet.
In the Heights. That sounds, did we do the trailer?
We did the trailer for it.
Okay, that's why it sounds familiar.
I don't have the episode. But but In the Heights is an HBO Max release, and it was directed by the director of Crazy Rich Asian, and it was written by Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Okay.
So it's another musical.
Oh, right, right.
And it just came out and we just watched it, but there was something about it, like, it was a beautiful movie to watch. It was great to watch. We loved every minute of it. It was funny. It was charming. It had Lin-Manuel Miranda's fingerprints all over it. But there was something that was not... The songs were good, but they didn't have that earworm. It didn't have the memorable... Didn't have one standout song in my mind. Like, it feels like Tick, Tick, Boom is going to have one, if not a couple.
Oh, it already does.
To three songs. Yeah. That will stand out, and it will just be like, you need those standouts for you to get the album. And then once you have the album, then, you know, you have your other favorites, you have your deeper cuts, deeper tracks, and then you develop this love for it. But I'm not buying an In the Heights soundtrack, even though I love the movie. I might watch a movie again. I might watch it outside, you know, in the heat of one of these Reseda nights at 100 degrees in our projection. But, you know, I don't see myself humming the songs. But like you said, off a trailer, we're already humming the tune, so we know that earworm is already there.
Dude, you just gave me the title to your next movie.
Uh-huh. What's that?
Hot Reseda Nights.
that's the Boogie Nights sequel.
It's Hot Reseda Nights. And oh my God, I'm just laughing over here. And when you think about Neil Diamond, Hot August Nights, and then you have like Hot Reseda Nights and then Boogie Nights, it's like there's some amalgamation that needs to come out of that, you know?
Oh, so you said Neil Diamond. I'll just tell you one story. We had Frank and Barbara over for dinner 2 weeks ago, and they came over to watch Cruella. So we'll talk about that. But they came over to a picnic outside, and Anne was still preparing food inside, and Barbara and Audrey's trying to be a hostess. So she's like, "Oh, there's no music outside. We should turn on some music." And Barbara's like, "Oh, I was just listening to some Neil Young at home." But I said Neil Diamond, and they're like, "Oh, it's completely different." Oh, you know, we laughed about it. But then I put on Neil Young, and I just put on a mix of Neil Young. Anne comes out of the house and says, "What awful music is this?"
Barbara, your musical taste is just horrible.
And I was like, "This is Neil Young, you know, this is like, you know, free, you know, I'm a big Pearl Jam fan, so I like Neil Young."
Yeah.
I guess as a household, we don't listen to it as a household, and Anne was like losing it. I was like, "All right, put on Neil Diamond now."
That's amazing. Anyway, go ahead. But yeah, I mean, I'm going to watch it for sure.
Yes.
I'm not a huge musical guy. But that opening scene that I opened our episode with tonight, you know,
yeah,
it's just the earworm. It just gets you. It drives it draws you in. It's like, and then, you know, I think this movie has the quintessential formulaic Hollywood musical theatrical like way they play it out, where like, it starts off, they're doing their thing in the apartment, and then the culmination, the climax, is you're in the big theater in front of thousands of people.
The lights. And the hot lights.
And it's your, like, virgin, the way I see it anyway, it's your virgin performance. It's your, you know,
yeah.
It's going to be the first time he's ever performed in front of people of a show to that magnitude.
Magnitude, yeah. And then, like, the, you know, the underpinnings of the trailer tropes, but the trailer tropes, if they're handled in this perfect, you know, metered way,
and the trailer checks all the boxes,
that's exactly. And even like when you like, I studied music very, very lightly in college, and it was like one of my only C's was music appreciation, which was supposed to be an easy class, and I was like, "Why am I getting a C?"
You're listening to Neil Young, and you said, "I appreciate that."
But one thing I do remember from that is like the rests are important. Like, you know, when you have the breaks and you have the silence between the notes, that's all part of it. And at the end, when they throw up the logo and they have the tick, tick, silence, and they put boom up on the screen, it's just like, "Oh, that was perfect." You don't do a boom when you're putting boom up on the screen. You go silent. You do the exact opposite, and you just need to leave everyone wanting more of this, but we're actually going to not play it out at all. We're just going to end in silence.
Exactly. It's like that emotional pause.
Right.
It pauses for that anticipation or whatever it is. But you're right about that, though. There's like that negative space, that negative sound. You know, in art, you have like white space.
Right, exactly. You know, it is the,
which
right.
is a part of the image. It's like,
oh, and photography too.
Yeah, I was going to.
What you don't take a picture of is as important as what you take a picture of.
I was going to get to Mr. Robot. And oh, when we yeah, were yeah. talking about the directing in Mr. Robot, and they would show a room, you know, apartment, uh-huh. living room or something, and they would have the actor, actress in like the bottom eighth corner. And the whole other like 90% of the screen was this, like, there was nothing there. And as you're watching, you're just thinking, "That is amazing."
You just feel the weight. You feel the weight of the whole scene on your head.
Yeah, I mean, like 10% of the screen has the character, and 90% is just negative space. And you're like, "Oh my God, this is like the directing." Genius. Is the cinematography is just like blows me out of the water, you know?
Right.
But Ted, with that, you like bacon, right?
I love bacon. I had some bacon yesterday morning. It was
now,
awesome.
I know the rest of your family doesn't have bacon.
I had some real bacon yesterday morning. I went to...
But that's a good thing, though. You know why? They leave more for you.
Exactly. Exactly. And when there's bacon on the menu and they had something that they want... We just get the bacon on the side because, you know, we're not paying less if they don't give us the bacon. So.
Oh, that's brilliant. Okay, question number two. Have you ever had real truffles?
Not like this. Not to the level that the professionals do like this.
Nor have I.
It's too expensive, isn't it?
Oh, truffles. Yeah, I think like good truffles are like hundreds, if not thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like outrageous.
An ounce or something.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, it's like ridiculous. So, Pig.
Pig.
Pig. That's the name of the movie. Pig with Nick Cage.
Pig with Nick Cage.
Dude.
So, the reason I threw this in here this week was the log line for this movie from Nerdist like blew me away and had me laughing at my Instagram feed for at least 30 seconds. I was giddily laughing because the log line that Nerdist said was the little tagline, little caption they put to it was, it's just like Taken except with a pig.
It's just like Taken with a pig.
Just like Taken with a pig. And you're just like, oh, I have to watch this. This is amazing.
What about the sequel? Tooken.
Tooken. That's right.
That's amazing.
Piggin.
Taken with a pig.
Taken with a pig.
Well, let's back up, though. Just if you think about the trailer jump. The jump scare.
Uh-huh.
Did you jump?
I don't remember. I don't think I did.
Spoiler alert. If you didn't watch it, you might jump. I was like eating lunch and I'm watching this and I'm like, I'm two thirds paying attention. I'm not going to say I'm half paying. Right. I'm two thirds paying attention.
Yeah.
And the jump scare comes and I was like, whoa, if I was paying attention, that would have got me. Right? So I play for Clarissa. I am not watching the trailer. I sit back and I'm just like, I'm watching Clarissa.
Watch her.
Sure enough, she I know it's audio and you can't see, but she does one of these like facial things like, and like one of those like, and her whole face just like deformed. And I was, yeah, sweet, it got her.
That's what I was waiting for.
And I was thinking like, okay, so the jump cut that I missed out because I was only half paying attention.
Two-thirds.
Got her because she was paying full attention.
Right.
And I thought, okay, this is a good trailer. If for nothing else, like, it's they got the jump scare going.
Right. Right.
And it's not even the nun telling me to pay attention to the end.
No.
They just do it.
No, they do the jump scare and they just let it lay. They just let it lay out there. Everything in this trailer earns its place.
Oh yeah, great trailer.
You know, it has you know, the classical music, the hermit with the pig, you know what I mean? It's just like, it is the simplicity of this, of the beauty of this space. And just like, and you can, and you know, and I guess I knew he was a truffle pig, but yeah, I guess, what do we say? Nick Cage was a chef who became a hermit, and you know, the essence of cooking, he boiled it down to just like, you know, truffles are so great that you don't actually need anything else. You know, it's all carrying.
Okay, so you beat me to the punch.
Yeah.
When they ask him, do you know who this is?
Tell him who you are.
Exactly, yeah. And the one chef is there. So I kind of had a feeling, I think what you're alluding to is Nick Cage, he plays some former famous chef who just went like off the reservation. And then he decides he's like, he becomes like the chef version of the Unabomber.
If the Unabomber fixed wonderful meals to serve to his truffle finding friend.
Where do you get truffles though?
In the woods, in the ground.
No, okay. Let me be more specific. Is it like Minnesota or is it like San Diego? You know what I mean? Like those are different in the ground.
Oh, no. I definitely think I don't know. I think it has to be in that European forest belt. So it's like north, you know, it feels like the northern half of America, the top third of America, probably Canada.
Yeah, like Minnesota.
Yeah, that space.
Like kind of like the Northwood.
Yes, yes.
Up in the Northwood.
It's like lichen and truffles.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that's so refreshing about this is we watch, I mean, tons and tons and tons of superhero.
Yeah.
Sci-fi, Star Wars, sci-fi superhero mix with Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, it's just the Marvel, Star Wars, DC amalgamation of the things that we watch, which gets even into, like, you know, what we're watching with things like Jupiter's Legacy and all that.
Oh, you watch that? Oh, I want to see that.
All this stuff, right? This is refreshing because a truffle pig. It's like, it's a guy who likes cooking good meals, and I don't know, maybe I'll get a tip or two if I pay close enough attention.
Well, I mean, it really strips out all of the layers of production and the what is it called? The chain, you know, the what is it called? It's the
I don't know.
Production chain, okay, you know? Yeah. When you're Amazon, you like, all right, we have to use UPS to ship stuff,
oh, but now yeah, we have our yeah, own trucks. Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think it's, I forget what it was. This is good beer. And it's very hot in my guest house. But it's almost like he's like, oh, I love cooking with truffles in the restaurants in New York City or wherever. And, you know, let me cut out the middleman. I'll get my own truffle pig. Oh, I'll move out to the woods where the truffles are. And everything's just a vehicle to carry truffles. So now the pig and I will have the pig root out the truffles. And, you know, you get the pig away from the truffle so that it doesn't eat the truffle right away. But then I'm going to prepare the gourmet meal for the pig. And serve him truffles the way it's meant to be delivered on a beautiful dish of whatever, you know?
The pig's eating $1,000 dinners. Unbelievable. All right, man. So, yeah, pig. Tick, tick, boom, and pig.
So what's the theme? What's the theme? What's the theme?
Oh, the theme. I have no idea. I mean,
you didn't like the music in Pig?
The music,
the orchestral. Okay. It had like this orchestral.
But it's not like, okay.
Yeah.
The reason why I didn't pick that up as a theme is because Tick, Tick, Boom is like musical music.
Forward, yes.
You know, this is the life, boom, ba, boom, boom. You know, like you're just like, it's like an earworm stuff, right?
Right. It's in your face.
It's right. Where Pig is just more like Mozart or Tchaikovsky.
Yeah.
It's just more like orchestral.
You could have plugged in any orchestral music and it could have worked.
Vivaldi.
But it just felt very classic. It felt like a great arrangement.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? Like a food, you know, Anne always says, you eat with your eyes first. And my kids are smart asses, so they say, no, I eat with my mouth. You know what I mean?
You know what?
But
I never thought of that.
Yeah.
Okay, I know Anne doesn't listen, but make sure she listens because I agree with her.
Oh, don't get me in trouble.
No,
now.
No. But like, I'm the kind of guy where like I make, in my opinion, I make amazing meals, but they present poorly.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
that tri-tip looked good.
Yeah, but I don't like lay it out on the platter. I just slap it down as I dig it, everybody.
Right.
And presents food really well. I mean, what? In the throes of COVID, man, she was putting stuff out with like the asparagus spears and like with a wedge of lemon, you know, and I mean, she was making them beautiful.
Well, even our breakfast, I was like, just throw the salmon out there for the bagels and lox. And Anne's like, Audrey, make the little nest roses out of each of the...
Like that scene in Goodfellas when they're cutting the garlic razor thin.
Yes, razor thin.
And like, paper thin garlic. I gotta cut the cucumbers. It's cut so thin you don't even see it.
You know? She sent you to the garage to sharpen your knives.
She did. And said, Jim, you need to go sharpen these. These aren't sharp enough. And I'm just like, okay, I've been cutting with them for years, but okay, sure. So I went, I got out my honing stone and the honing oil. And I'm like on that, like the 45 degree angle. I'm like getting it going. And oh, man. All right, man. So what have you been watching? I mean, we have a couple of weeks, lots to talk about. If you want to give me the laundry list, go for it. But I would say hit the highlights of what you loved, maybe the lowlights of what you didn't. And then you could just like tap in the middle of whatever might be.
Okay. Well, I already talked about In the Heights.
Right.
Liked In the Heights a lot. Cruella, I watched with Frank and Barbara and the family. It would be the second or the third time Audrey saw it. I liked it a lot. It held up well there. Disney, you know, when they do live action of animated classics, they do two things. They do the straight up, you know, remake of the animated thing, like Aladdin is kind of like that. And that's okay. But when they do a reimagining of the origin story of a villain like Maleficent or Cruella, it really layers in some needed, you know, depth of character. And it really lets you into a space where you come to terms with somebody that you hated your whole life because they're a villain and something you saw as a kid.
Like Darth Vader.
And then you get to see, and then you get to see them and you're like, oh, I understand how they could be as awful as they are. You know, I see the pain that somebody put them through to create the broken person that is that villain in the future that seemed like one dimensional.
Anakin Skywalker. Right.
And so there you set it up. You pitched it to me. I will hit it out of the park for us.
I didn't know I gave you a softball, but go for it.
You loaned me.
Oh, yeah.
A club version. Now, you explained this on the podcast before, but I guess I wasn't paying attention. How do you come by this? Because I watched the legal disclaimer at the top of this and I paused it to read it. And I'm like, fan edit, you know, don't support piracy. And I was like, I think Jimmy said something about joining a club or something and having this as like, you can't buy it, right? Are you?
No, I bought them.
Okay. So how do they explain that away? It feels like you can't buy this thing.
You know, Ted,
it's a gray area.
When I discovered these, it has been so many years. I don't even remember how it all came to be. I think I was like searching around on the internet and I thought, you know, like I'm looking for the original theatrical releases of the original trilogy,
Right.
Before
OT. Yes. 4, 5, 6.
Before Lucas ruined my childhood.
Before he made your childhood and then ruined it.
Exactly. And, somewhere along the way, I think it was like on a Reddit
thread. Yeah.
Thread or something, or, you know, I don't even know, a Discord thing or something. Who knows where the hell I was on the internet. But you find
Friendster.
Yeah, you go Friendster, right? You go down these rabbit holes and you come out on the other side of some topic and you discover this stuff. And I was like, oh, wow, this is amazing. And I think I got them off of eBay.
Uh-huh. The despecialized.
The despecialized version. And I think it was like the three movies might have been $50 or something. And it's one of those things where a fan edit is legally in the realm of being able to watch for free.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're buying essentially is the printing on a DVD
right.
of this fan edit.
Right.
Right. So it is a gray area. I'll agree with you. But what I can say is the guy did an amazing job. I mean, what's your opinion of it?
So it was so fun to watch this with my kids. So I got the whole family to watch New Hope together.
Okay.
Audrey wasn't too jazzed about it. She didn't like, you know, she begrudgingly watched as a 15-year-old girl.
To watch, she wasn't jazzed to watch, or she wasn't jazzed at what it was compared to the other?
She wasn't jazzed to watch. She wasn't in the mood to watch the movies. But Bryce was all about it. Bryce wanted to watch it the minute it came home, so we ended up watching it very, very soon after we got home.
Okay, okay.
And Anne was too. Anne was intrigued by it. So we watched it, and there were many scenes in it where I guess they have smoothed out some of the CGI in the original. Like, the original has some jump cuttiness around, like, the opening and closing of doors that in the original wasn't as smooth.
Okay.
And Bryce identified them as bad cuts. And I'm like, oh, no, no. When the door opens kind of herky-jerky like that, and the characters are a little akimbo, they're not exactly where they were when the door started to open, and they look like it's a bit of a jump cut.
Yeah.
I said, that's more actually to the original. And then it always bothered me and Anne as well, that Bryce would say, oh, this is a new part. And we're like, no, that's the original. It's not new.
So he recognized it was different.
Yes, he recognized it was different.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, when Greedo is in there, we all braced ourselves.
Who shot first?
And we were like, we're going to see Han Solo shoot first. And clearly he shot first. So... there's no doubt.
I love it.
And we're only halfway. We're on our way to Dagobah in Empire.
Okay.
So we had to stop, but we're there.
So of the three movies, you're in the middle of the second movie.
Middle of two.
Gotcha. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it was, you know, I don't, like I said, I don't remember exactly how I came upon these. It was a number of years ago. And the first time I watched it, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. So the boys watched A New Hope, you know, the original Star Wars. And you even notice on the scroll how it doesn't even say A New Hope. It just says Star Wars, right?
Right. Star Wars, right.
So the boys watch it, and we watched it, and they've probably seen it like five times.
Mm-hmm.
And then I played the Blu-ray version, the official Blu-ray version.
Right.
And they're all of a sudden it was like little Jim sitting in the room. The hell is this? Why is all this in there? What do you mean this is going on? Why are they farting? This doesn't even make sense.
Why is Jabba walking around? Like,
but it was hilarious because they're just like, they were so used to the original that when I put on the other, I said, okay, we're going to watch like the one that Lucas wants you to believe is the original.
Right.
They're like, okay, sure, whatever. And we put it on and they were just like, this is terrible.
They spat it out.
Oh. I was just like, boys, you are true thespians and you will do well in life. And, so what else you been watching?
Well, and then Loki, man.
We have yet to watch an episode.
Oh, my God. So
is it that good?
In the hierarchy of Marvel schmovies.
Okay, we're getting caught up this weekend.
Yeah, in the hierarchy of Marvel schmovies, it week one, it was right below WandaVision.
Okay.
So it goes right before this, it was WandaVision was the height.
For schmovies,
and Winter Soldier, Falcon and Winter Soldier was very, very good, right? But this screamed past Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Okay.
You know, and it butted right up under WandaVision. And I said, but there's six episodes total. So there's five more episodes of this. Now we're three episodes in. And I will say, like, the wow factor and the anticipation for watching Loki, it matches that of WandaVision. Like the surprises and the shocks in the show are so well played that it's for me, it surpassed WandaVision already.
Oh, wow.
So I will readdress the children, but yeah, so I think it is the best thing. And it really is setting up, you know, the we wanted WandaVision to set up the cinematic universe and the next phase and things like that. And what WandaVision did was it led us into the Disney Plus space. So it brought us into this new way of watching, this new mode of watching schmovies. And now it feels like Loki's the one that's really going to ramp us up and really going to bring us into the multiverse, which is, you know, the next Doctor Strange movie is across the multiverse. The next Spider-Man movie is in the multiverse. So this is addressing the multiverse directly. And the director, the showrunner of Loki, went directly into production on Doctor Strange. So it's going to really have a solid through line into the cinematic universe from the schmovie universe.
Yeah, man, I can't wait. I'm really looking forward to watching it.
Yeah. So we'll definitely talk more about it once you've seen it, because it's got amazing stuff.
We'll be caught up we'll get caught up this weekend, and we'll.
Oh, it's so quick. It's a quick watch.
Yeah, we'll be caught up by, you know, next week when we record. With that, what you're saying though, we did just watch Captain America and the Winter Soldier.
Uh huh. Oh, okay.
The movie, that is.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. And, I mean, like, outrageous violence.
It is dark.
I mean, well, it's not just that it's dark. It's like just...
dead in a bathtub, right?
They're just blowing up everything.
Oh, I thought the more, even more... blowing up everything. Yes, I get it. That's horrible. But it kind of masks that super villain, superhero space. And it's kind of a casualty of war, kind of this mass casualty that is kind of a little impersonal. But I thought the dead scientist in the bathtub, to me, that was the most intimate kind of murder in any of the Marvel movies, you know, to show like the one guy.
Well, and the boys were freaking out with the German scientist who was like uploaded to the computer.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Whatever his name was, I don't remember.
Right, right.
But yeah, it's like, oh, you can't get rid of me. I am, you know, I am the singularity, essentially.
Hydra, right? Yeah.
Yeah, hail Hydra. And, you know, and then you're looking at Robert Redford and all this stuff. I mean, it was great. I mean, it was a great movie. It was just like, oh, the violence. So like, you're blowing up DC. And then Jupiter's Legacy, another super.
Okay, how was this? They scrapped it.
We're halfway through.
Yeah.
Maybe we're not half. I don't know. I think it's 8 episodes. We're 4 in. So far, so good.
I hope they finished making all 8 for you, because I heard they quickly scrapped any sequels or any second seasons for this.
Oh, yeah. No, that I heard about. Yeah. As far as what's been released, because, you know, Netflix releases it like once it's done, it just like vomits it out on you.
Right, right, right.
And we're 4 episodes in. So far, it's good. I mean, it's, you know, it's more superhero stuff. It's what you would expect, I think. I don't think it's, you know, it's...
Is it a new angle?
Nah, so far, I haven't seen a new angle. It's like really powerful superheroes beating up on really powerful villains.
Okay.
And the villain is so powerful that the superheroes have a hard time defeating him. And the superheroes have their own internal conflicts, like within their family. So it's like they're fighting each other and the supervillain. You know, it's kind of soap opera villain. I mean, it's okay. It's good, you know, but
right.
I mean, I would recommend watching it. It's easy. I think they're about 48 minutes or so each.
Okay.
So they're not short, but you know, you can get them knocked out. And then I wanted to get into one last thing that we talked, but before I do, what did you want to finish up with, or do you want to finish up with anything?
Well, I did want to say, so this week, Big Shot on Disney Plus is the John Stamos vehicle where he goes to coach, you know, girls' high school basketball. And it did a 10 episode run, I believe. And it ended very powerfully. You know, it was like, it was well done. And it was like, you know, it is very close to network television, you know, from the producer of, you know, Boston Legal and stuff like that. So he's an old school TV guy, but it was so well done. And it's, it is, you know, it has heart. So it's a good show for parents, especially parents of girls, but any parent can kind of relate to the idea of sacrificing for your kids, you know?
Oh man, no doubt, for sure.
So tell me.
Army of the Dead.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I have a couple of things about it. First of all, just on the superficial side of things, I loved it.
Who directed that? I forget again. No, Zack Snyder. It's a joke because his name is in the opening credits 7 times.
When you were talking about in the last, actually it's the last episode and we said we were going to cover it.
Uh-huh.
You were talking about how terrible the opening font was. And it was as bad as and plain as you know,
right?
With the topless showgirls and yeah, I mean, it was amazing. The opening was amazing. And they explain away everything really well.
Don't you think? I think it's well explained.
Yeah, a zombie heist movie. Well, they wall off Vegas, essentially, and the zombies can't get out, right?
Right.
I take a problem with the zombies, though. So let me read from the 4th edition monster manual for Dungeons and Dragons.
Okay.
Main thing is what they talked about. Let me back up really quick. What they talked about is the zombie this, the zombie that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they were zombies. I think they had zombies and I think they had ghouls.
Yes. Okay. I got you. They definitely were talking about layers of zombies and zombies with different layers of intelligence.
Layers of intelligence. Right. So again, reading from the 4th edition Dungeons & Dragons Monster Manual, if you look at the Abyssal Ghoul, he has an intelligence of 19.
Okay.
Consider 20 as the highest intelligence you can have.
Oh, wow. Okay. Thank you for giving me the scale. 19 sounded like stupid.
No. 20's the highest, right?
Yeah, I got you now.
If I'm going to look at an equivalent level of zombie, I'm looking at an intelligence. Oh, where am I here? I'm looking at an intelligence at 1. You know, I'm looking, let's see, a different zombie, a corruption corpse. Let's see, that would be an intelligence. Oh, geez. Oh, here we go. Intelligence 4.
Okay, okay.
Like, that's a high zombie, right? A 4.
4.
We're looking at a gravehound zombie, whatever the hell that means. Intelligence 1.
Right.
A zombie rotter, intelligence 1. A straight-up zombie, intelligence 1. Where we're looking at ghouls, an abyssal ghoul hungerer, 19. An abyssal ghoul myrmidon, I don't know how to pronounce that, 19.
So smart.
An abyssal ghoul, 16.
Yeah.
A horde ghoul, 13. Like, they're smart. So the main ghoul guy that put the metal can on his head,
right,
for the bullets, he's a ghoul. He's not a zombie.
Right.
Had they explained that, like, well, although how would they know, though? So, okay, never mind. I guess they're zombies. But what I like about it, though, is it wasn't like The Walking Dead where they called him everything under the sun but zombie.
Right.
In this, they said zombie all day long.
Right. And, you know, and my favorite part of that was
how everybody got killed.
Well, no. So when they said that they were trapped, and then the one girl that was like the coyote getting them in there, they're like, no, they're not trapped. They choose this as their kingdom. You know what I mean? They rule in here. You know what I mean? So it was like, because scaling that wall, you know what I mean? It's a wall, sure. But, you know, given the time and given the effort and given the energy, they could have, you know, left that, you know, for with their level of intelligence, you know, for the ghouls that run the town. But they didn't have to leave. They ruled the roost, you know. So I love that part of it. And I love the idea that opening montage, the opening sequence, you know, it sets you up. And it sets you up for the world that you're going to live in for the movie. But then it also sets up this great emotional play to where Batista leaves his team member. And like with that final crate that falls into place, crushing some of the people that he's saving, like he has to watch these people that he's saving get crushed, you know, to finish sealing off the wall. And it just was a great a great way to just end a chapter and then move on to the action of the movie.
Yeah, it was a lot
of
fun.
It's well crafted.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I would say it was one of the better zombie movies I've seen in recent.
Definitely recently, for sure. Yeah.
It's like, when you think about art, don't be better, be different.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, some people are such amazing artists and they get no recognition because they're just better than the other guy. And the other guy is amazing. So you,
right.
But then you have somebody who's, you know, like drawn stick figures and somehow they get noticed.
Right. You know Banksy because Banksy does it differently.
Because it's not different. Because exactly.
It's better art.
Exactly. Right.
Because he shreds his art while you're buying it at an auction.
Dude, that's amazing. That's amazing. But that's the thing, though, right? And that's what makes it so good is that
it's notable.
It's notable. Exactly. It's that it's different. And in the zombie genre, this was just a different movie. I mean, it was really well done.
What did you mentioned it, so everybody dies. Like, is that a downer for you, or is it just like a nice chef's kiss at the end, a little denouement? So we think that the one guy gets away, but you know, he reveals.
Well, two people got away.
Right.
Right.
But the one guy we thought
got away.
And she did. She got away scot-free, I think, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
The other guy got away on his way to Mexico City. And when he realized.
On a private jet.
And when he realized he was bitten and he just was like, oh, shit. Or whatever he said. And then you were like, and then it went around the world.
Can't stop. Is this the sequel? Yes.
he's patient zero. Right. Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was. I mean, I hope there's not a sequel. I don't want to see a sequel because it was so well done for a zombie movie. Like, anything outside of this is just gonna be carnage,
right?
You know, when you leave and you say, oh, okay, I guess I got bit. And like, you know where it's going. My imagination can finish the rest of the story.
Yeah.
I don't need you to tell me what the story is in just cheesy gunplay, you know?
Right.
So, yeah. And then last thing was we finished The Handmaid's Tale. So season 4.
In the books. Check it off the list.
Check it off the list. And Elizabeth Moss did a lot of the directing and stuff.
Oh, yeah. You were saying that last time.
She did an awesome job. I mean, her directing, her cinematography, the way she would just like frame the shot and so on, where people would be in the frame and how she would do it and capturing the emotion and even the writing and such, where there were scenes where you're like, they could totally kidnap her, take this scene, and they could totally bring it where you think most shows would go, and it never went there.
Oh, nice.
But then they bring in, like, 5 minutes later, there's the scene where you think, oh, yeah, they're just going to take her and bring her back. Because every other TV show would do that, right?
Uh-huh.
Nope. Really slow, quiet, intimate scene, really emotional. And you're like, but the anticipation was there.
Right.
And you're like, the scene ends and you just breathe and you go, oh. They didn't take her because you thought they were going to.
Yeah.
And then the next scene, they drop a bomb and you're just like,
literally a bomb?
No,
sometimes there are bombs. Okay. There were bombs.
That's
in
true.
It.
That's true. Metaphorical.
Okay. Metaphorical as well as the physical.
Yeah.
Bombs,
but yes. They drop this like metaphorical bomb on you and you're just like, oh shit. Like, oh F, you know? And you're like, I can't believe it. What you thought was going to happen 5 minutes prior didn't, but they brought something even bigger.
Right.
On to you, and you're just like, damn, you know, like it was really well done. The directing was really good. I feel, you know, I don't know what she's going to do after this, but I feel her directing has really come into its own or her own.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, she did a great job with putting this together and the production and the directing of it all and stuff. And
that's awesome.
And, you know, I like seeing that too, because it's like, it's the first thing somebody gets to do, and they direct and act and produce in the show. They're doing like everything, you know, they get to do it all.
Right.
And it's like, man, she's like talented. you know, she has some serious talent. And I mean, I think that was one of the coolest things that I took from it. You know, obviously the story and the show itself. But then, you know, you just layer on like the meta watching, if you will. Right. Yeah, you layer on the meta watching, you know, but
awesome.
I guess that was the show to boom, ba boom, boom. Dude, I told you it's like an earworm. I can't get rid of it.
It is there. You just speak in that pentameter for the rest of the week.
Oh, God.
How'd your beer finish out?
Oh, dude, it's amazing. It was solid, good Imperial IPA. But how about my beer? How did it finish up?
So your beer, my guest house without the AC on because it's so god awful loud. I am sweating into my beer. it is still refreshing. It actually holds up. You know, like normally when the IPAs get warmer, they get more complex and they get more robust. But yours, like from cold to warm, it was just that robust at the beginning and it maintains it through.
Okay. Okay.
Which means, like you said, the hops were so maxed out that even cold, they're still like attacking your taste buds.
Right.
And then when it blooms and it blossoms and it's hitting your tongue warm, there's nothing else to do. Your whole palate's been ravaged by the hops already. So it just continues to do the same in that same nice, nice full way.
Good. I'm glad you enjoyed it, man. I love sending beer home with you or giving beer to you and stuff and homebrew because, you know, I mean, like we do our beers and we talk beer and we drink beer and we buy really expensive beer. And when you get to make the stuff that you like, and kind of the things that are your favorites, you know, those oak bourbon barrel aged stouts and porters and IPAs, Imperial IPAs. You know, you're talking some like serious, like, I don't know, that if I had to guess, that's probably like that bottle is probably like $12 or $15 at a store.
Oh no, you know. Yeah, I think you undersell it. I think it's in the $20 range for
sure.
It's
a $20 bottle of beer, right?
Yeah. $20.
Yeah,
for sure.
So when you think about, like, you know, and then you brew it, and by the time it's all said and done, you're like, okay, I have X number of bottles at $25 a piece, and I spent $70 in recipe, and you're just like,
oh,
damn,
that's a deal.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, damn, I make a good beer.
How much is that carboy? I gotta get a carboy and start doing it myself.
Let me get a carboy. I'll throw this on the stove. I'll just start like boiling. How long does it take? Like 60 minutes? I could do that. man, get me a timer.
No, you know what? I'll go on Amazon. I'll order a Mr. Beer. Isn't that the same thing?
I think there's a Mr. Beer out there.
And Mr. Beer is like your consumer home brewer. Like it's the one that you just get on the internet.
Maybe. I don't even know. Wow, how did I even get involved? You know, it's funny. Like, I think it was, I never bought a kit, right? I think it was like, I want to get into brewing. All right. And we went to this place in the valley and I said, I want to brew beer. And they said, well, you need a few things. I said, and what are those? And they said, well, you got to like have a place to ferment. You got to, and it gave me, you need this. I'm like, all right, put it on the list. I'll buy it. And I don't know. I mean, parts. You know, like if you think about equipment, I think I'm in stainless steel kettle, you know, all this stuff.
Right. The Keezer.
Well, okay, that's for serving. I'm talking about making.
Okay.
But even still, the Keezer, I mean, what is that, $120? You know, like, it's not bad. Like, I think if you, even if I count that and all my kegging stuff, I think I'm still in under $1,000.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's paid itself already.
Oh, totally.
If you consider your beers are anywhere from the cheapest beer you could probably make.
$15.
Is it $12? Yeah, $12 to $15. And then on the high end, $30. So in that $15 to $30 range per beer.
And keep in mind, when we talk those prices, we're talking about, you know, a pint and a half.
Consumer.
A pint and a half.
Consumer though. For tall, yeah. tall ones.
Yeah. What is it? 22 ounces or something. I'm not talking about 12 ounces, but.
Right.
But like a standard, like tall, kind of a big beer, like big in volume, mm-hmm. a Belgian type big volume beer, let's say. Yeah. You're talking about $15 to $25 on average. I've probably done some that would be valued at more, like closer to 30. And maybe I've done a few like less than that, but I would say all told, man, what did I do? 20? No. 30 some odd, no, maybe 40. I don't even know, to be honest with you. 50? No, not, maybe not. Whatever. 45.
50 batch. 45 batches.
45 batches of beer.
And how many in a batch? A case? 24? 12? 20?
Oh, if you're looking at 12 ounces, you're looking at about 50 beers.
50 beers. 50 beers per batch.
Per batch. Like two cases.
So two cases and just say $20 a beer just to average it out.
So if you think like, let's say you're looking at $20 a 12 pack, right? Let's say on the low end, $20 a 12 pack. You're looking at like $80, probably $100 retail for beer, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's if you're just doing pale ales and stuff and just like regular beers. I'm not. I'm doing like those bourbon oak aged, you know, whatever. And those beers you go and it's like, you know, you've seen them. I mean, they're like $35 a bottle. And
easy.
I'm doing that kind of beer, right?
Right.
So when you think about it, I mean, you're looking at like bottom barrel, $100 and the ingredients are like 65. Now, let me put it straight. Nobody ever made money with a hobby.
But you're saving money for sure.
But what I'll say, though, is over time, now, my first batch was January 2011.
Mm-hmm.
50 batches later, over a decade. I mean, you know, I do like 5 a year or something.
Right.
4 or 5 a year. So that's fair to say, you know, 10 years of brewing. What I would say is the money's not really saved in what you're doing. The money's saved over the long haul because it's like a little bit over time makes a lot of, you know.
Right.
But what I'll also say is nobody's doing this to save money. You're doing it because you like drinking really good beer.
The enjoyment.
Exactly. Yeah. And making it and crafting it and sharing it. And like, I love giving my beer away. You know, I mean, I like drinking it, obviously, but I love giving my, and then when people go like, you made this? Yeah, I made it. No, you made this. Yes, I made this. Oh my God. Like, you made this?
You spoiled me because now this is what I expect from
exactly.
you. Like, you know?
And it's like, and then it's kind of like, why aren't you opening a brewery? You know? And it's like,
because you enjoy doing it and you don't want the enjoyment to stop.
Because I don't need to brew 24/7. I need to brew two times a month.
Because the minute that you turn it into a job, then the enjoyment quotient diminishes at least.
Everybody's expecting my beer.
But could go to zero.
No, if like I brew two times a month. If I brew one time a month, that's a lot. I tend to brew like every other month.
Every other month, yeah.
You know, and a lot of times I want to brew.
You do it on a whim.
Yeah. I do it on a whim. I want to brew. I don't get to the store.
Bike. You just get the stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. But no, brewing's fun. I mean, it's one of my favorite things to do. It's one of those things where every time I tell Clarissa I'm going to hang it up and never brew again, I think I've told her that for 5 years now.
Uh-huh.
And the funny thing about it is it's one Saturday that I brew and then that batch ferments over weeks and then you bottle or keg and then, you know, it seems like a long process, but really your energy is 8 hours.
Oh, really? 8 hours per batch. Huh?
Yeah. Eight. That's like what.
But it's spread out. It's spread out over.
Well,
weeks.
It's like you have brew day,
right?
Which is like 6 hours. And then you have
bottling.
And
day.
Then you have like bottle or keg day, which is like 2 to 3 hours. Max.
Yeah. So 10 hours. So
10 hours max over 8 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's wait 3 more weeks to drink. So you're talking like 12, you know, 3 months by the time you brew to drink. And it's like, oh my God, that's such an investment. But really, energy out of your part of you is like a day's labor.
Right.
You know, it just takes time to get there. And if you really were that invested, you could do it every weekend and then you would just have this constant churn of beer.
Right.
I'm just too lazy to do it like that.
Well, just look at this. I did a quick little math thing. So if you say that you had 50 batches.
Okay.
And they did about 50 beers each.
Right.
Just for big round numbers over the past 10 years.
Yeah.
And they're about $20 a bottle just on average because there's some.
Well, no, those 15, would be 20. $10, say, a bottle because you got to cut that because the 50 beers would be 12 ounces. But what I'm doing is a pint.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Right.
Well, then anywhere from $25,000 to $50,000 over the 10 years in beer price and beer and beer. If you were buying that from, you know, the Valley Bev or whatever.
So are you telling me how much I spent on ingredients?
No, no. You spent less than 5,000. Less, you know, 50 batches. You said $100 a batch.
No, about, let's say.
For the ingredients?
Let's say $70 a batch.
So $70 times 50?
Well, that's for the 10 $3,500.
Years. There you go.
Yeah. So
there you go. That's what you spent. And then you said there's an initial investment for the bottles and the materials. So another $500 on top of that. So 4,000.
Say 1,000. $4,500.
$4,500. And your rewards for that is probably like a 25.
Say $5 a bottle.
$30,000 value over 10 years.
So say $5 a bottle. So like if you look at like, $5 a bottle would be like $5 a beer. Uh-huh. And I'm probably $1 a beer investment, $1.50, right? So say, you know, 5 times 5 is 250. So that's 250 is probably what I'm, so 250 times 50 is what? 25 times 5 is 120, so about 10,500. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I have 12,500 from something else that I was punching.
Okay.
Up,
so I'm just going off of just top of my head math, but
yeah. Yeah.
So no, I think you're a little bit over exaggerated. I would say,
I've seen the beer prices though. The beer prices are off the hook. If you put barrel aged on your label, you are charging $20 for that thing.
Okay. I'm talking 12 ounce beers, not like,
oh, okay.
Right. 22 ounce beers. I'm talking 12 ounce beers. So
right.
You're talking $5 a beer. Although I shouldn't say that. Maybe it's more. Maybe it's like $8 a beer. If you think about like craft beer at a bar, right?
I mean, I have this
Dogfish
Head 120.
Oh, dude, that's expensive.
And it's 12 ounces. Come on. It's still $30. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's what I'm brewing. I'm brewing that kind of stuff. So maybe, I mean, say $10 a beer.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking $500, $500 a batch. And then you're talking 50 batches, so
25,000.
Yeah, 25,000 for let's just say, you know, let's round it up. Let's say an $8,000 investment.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe I am saving money. All right, so you talk me into it. I'm going to get some recipe this weekend.
All right, let's do it.
Actually, I have Imperial Stout with cocoa nibs I'm going to brew this weekend.
Awesome.
It's in the fridge right now.
Nice.
Yeah, so cocoa nibs. So there you go. Anyway, man, let's get out of here. We had such a good night.
All right, I'll talk to you next week.
I'm so happy to be back.
See you next week.
All right, sounds good. We'll talk.
All right, bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.